Welcome to part two of our interviews with Marisa Taylor and Kim Nichols.
I've always gotten this impression, you do really get an autonomous thing there. You can kind of, you really have a lot of control from what I can see anyway as an outsider. Is that a fair thing to say?
Just because we're women?
No, because you're winemakers. The women thing is a separate
thing. Oh, okay.
No.
We have more control because we're women.
You seem to be able to have a great deal of say in what you're doing. I know most winemakers have to, but it seems more so with Terlato. At least that's what I've seen.
I would say yes. I think that your observation is correct. I think that I know from the beginning of when I started, it was really important. You know, Doug Fletcher, the VP of winemaking, was in the process of hiring. He wanted winemakers at each of the wineries that would, I think, have longevity and be a good team and a good fit, because we do rely on one another. And the Trelatos, I mean, they trust us. They give us a lot of trust. I think they like our wines. They see that they're doing well, and they give input. Tony's a very creative guy and a very passionate guy, as you well know, and he has ideas, and we try new things, and you know, there is a dialogue, but yeah, they do let us make the wines, so
the way it should be.
Yeah,
you work with Doug Fletcher
I
as
do.
Well.
Yeah, Kim's. Well, I guess we should make that clear, the distinction between the two. I mean, Trelato reps.
Trelato's my marketing company, but we're owned separately.
Rutherford Hill is part of the Trelato Wine Group,
right.
So that's a way of distinguishing it. And Doug Fletcher is the VP of winemaking,
right.
So he oversees. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me do this. Let's pour your wine, and then I want to talk about women in winemaking. So. Why don't you tell me about what I'm pouring here, if you would?
What I'm pouring for you today is actually a new wine. We started with the 2010 vintage. This is a 2011, and I'm putting the blend together for the 2012 at home, and we'll bottle it when I get back to the winery. The Cellar 1879 red blend came about, you know, we were trying to brainstorm about doing something new, and our stone cellar, which you can see on the front of our label, was actually built in 1879 by a Frenchman by the name of Jean Laurent. So when I was thinking about making a blend, it was really about how I could honor that, the history of the winery and the building. Back in the 1800s, you know, vineyards were planted as blends. And so I think that that's something fun for me to do. I mean, Markham is a very established brand, and it was successful long before I got there. And hopefully I'm just keeping it running along that path, which I'm proud to do. With the 1879 blend, what I'm hoping to create is just kind of a blend that we at the winery like to have with all of our foods that we're making there. And you know, the guys that work with me in the cellar are a couple of families from Zacatecas, Mexico. So we eat a lot of spicy food. And so, you know, this wine, I'm not afraid to let it be a little bit more spicy, have, you know, a little bit different profile than the other wines. But as a winemaker, I like to think that I have a very food sense that comes through in my wines. I have a nice, bright acidity, and they go well with food. Mm. I think that you can make very flamboyant wines, I'll say that, that don't necessarily go with food, that are heavy on the oak and, you know, maybe heavy with sweetness and things like that. You know, that's my goal for the wine, is just to kind of make it fun to drink, because I think that's what blends should be. Blends should be fun to drink, and they can be serious wine, but they should be seriously fun.
That's a good way to put
it.
Well, cheers.
Cheers.
To both
cheers.
Of you. And again, thank you for coming. Something for me, and maybe it's just my own personal prejudice, when I taste Napa wines, many of them, when I just get that nose, it's just like being back there and being in a tasting room. You were talking about the smell of the cellar. To me, that just never goes away. Of course, smell is such an important sense, but it sticks with you. You walk into a winery anywhere in any state, and you get that, but it takes you back to your favorite places. And speaking of the cellar, tell me about who are the owners of Markham?
We are actually owned by Marischen Corporation, which is a Japanese winery. They have the oldest winery in Japan. Our stone cellar is 140 odd number of years old, and they have a 130-year-old winery in Japan, which I've been lucky enough, I know, crazy, huh?
Yeah, really.
To visit. And so they're actually interested in fine wine, and so they come to visit. I mean, my boss, the president of the winery, Brian Del Bondio, has been at the helm at Markham for almost 35 years. And so, you know, he is really the person that I report to, and I think that, you know, Japan is stays out of the day-to-day running, and Brian does most of it. So for me and Brian, it does feel like it's a family-run organization with all the guys in the cellar and things like that. And we have, you know, the great support of, you know, Terlato Wines for marketing all of our wines.
Winemaking is it's a personal thing. It seems to be, even for big corporations, very family-oriented because of the people that come in to work there as well as the people who run the place. I mean, it's not widgets. Right.
No, and it's very much about longevity and having that, you know, you're just the consistency. And that's, for me, what winemaking has been at Markham. It's the consistency from vintage to vintage, which you keep your consumer base and, you know, you train, you know, new people to enjoy wine. And that's what it's about for me, is to make people understand, much like what you said, you know, you want them to understand, demystify wine so that they enjoy it and realize, you know, it doesn't have to be serious. I mean, I'm certainly not serious. I think you can see that. But, you know, wine itself, you know, we have great jobs.
Yeah, we do.
And it's okay if I say, you know, this wine smells like raspberries. You know, someone goes, I don't smell raspberries, but I smell strawberries. That's okay. Yeah. It's okay that we don't smell like each other, or I say caramel and you say vanilla. It's okay, people.
And this is coming from a winemaker.
Absolutely.
So important to know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that could, because, yeah, people need to understand that. It's going to be different. There seems to be more and more women winemakers that we're seeing in the world. Specifically, I'm seeing many in California. I'm seeing some in Oregon. This is a job that requires a lot of physical work. And it's definitely not for the faint at heart. I mean, you are very hands-on as winemakers.
Yeah. We've spoken about it before, too, is that it depends on kind of which capacity. I think that there's winemakers, and given different size wineries, yes, they're very hands-on. You can be the only winemaker at a winery, and that's all you do, is you're out there maybe with one other cellar hand doing all the work. At larger facilities, like, I mean, yes, we're hands-on, walking vineyards, taking samples, tasting, smelling tanks, and all that kind of thing. But as a winemaker, I think it's a title. It's a leader of the winery. You're leading the charge and giving direction, overseeing everything. But, you know, we have very supportive staff and crew that, you know, they're the winemakers as well. They're the ones down there touching the wine and doing the racks and the blends and saying, hey, you guys got to come smell this tank. It's not smelling right. You know, you rely on that. There's a trust there. And so I do shovel a tank every year, so I do get in the tank, and it's a nice reminder of how hard everybody works. I guess Kim
does
it
too. As Kim grabs her back.
So it didn't do it when I was pregnant, but you know, I
think
it's a nice it's a nice reminder. Or sometimes I'll just go help get stuff. You know, I don't get in the tank, but it's always good. I love, you know, harvest for me too. Just getting to that time of year, as I am down there more, and I love it because I do miss it. You get bogged down with, you know, look at these labels and bottling schedules, and, you know, do a lot of hands-on with tasting. I mean, I'm definitely tasting every day. So as far as that part of hands-on, but yeah, the physical nature of the winery it's a lot of hard work. You know, we have both men and women in our cellar, so I think it's a great thing to have. So
I guess the point I'm trying to make is that this is just about making good wine. It certainly matters who you are as an individual, but there are all kinds of people who can make great wine. That's what it's all about in the end, right?
It is. It's about being able to, just like Marisa said, I mean, we all can make wine in the cellar, but it's having the leadership and being able to taste the wine. And if you have, you know, the palate, and that may just be from cooking. I mean, I approach winemaking like I'm cooking. And so when I'm blending, I'm looking at those different flavors from the different vineyard blocks and the different varietals as seasonings, or the different barrels as seasonings, and you're putting that together. And so I think that's what's helped me get to where I'm at, because I'm a pretty successful cook. So therefore, you know, I'm pretty good at blending, I think.
Well, and there is this, I don't know if it's myth or if it's an actual fact, that women have more receptors in their taste buds. And, you know, I don't know how true that is, but some people, it's fascinating. There are some people I know, some women I know, when they taste, they pick up things where I'm like, what? You know, there's the difference we've already talked about, but there's also this, wow, you're getting so much more detail than I'm getting. Mm. It's kind of fascinating, I think.
Yeah. I guess it's like a different perspective too. I mean, To Kim's talking point about food and wine, I mean, I'm the same way as far as the approach with wine. I also remind people that, like she's saying, the raspberry, you know, the different smells, but it's also, you know, we don't all like the same foods. You know, when we go to restaurants, you know, I wouldn't order the octopus or, you know, like.
Yeah, I love the octopus.
Right. I mean, we all have different flavors. So, you know, it's the same sort of thing, too. When you sit down and you're cooking and like with your blending, I think it's the same thing. I love to blend as well. And it's the same sort of thing. You're nitpicking and you might go, there's still something missing. And, you know, you go and maybe you fine tune it with what your barrel selection is, or maybe it just needs sometimes 1 or 2% of something else. And I don't know, I've heard that same study, getting back to what you brought up with the receptors on the tongue. And I think that's true. I think there's science, but I think everybody, it's also just your perception and how you use it when it comes down to blending, whether you have all those or not. So I think there's plenty of awesome winemakers that don't have so many receptors too.
Sure.
And they may or may not be men.
I'll wrap this up in a minute. Yeah. Well, I haven't gotten thrown out of the room yet. Marisa, you mentioned one thing just about the idea of a cellar worker smelling a tank and something being weird. And that just really set me off for a moment. I was like, does that just totally freak you out? I mean, is it something you just stay calm over and you know how to deal with? And does that happen very often?
No, I don't freak out. Yes, it does happen during harvest. I think that depending on, usually it's, you know, maybe a fermenter's going really fast. The nutrients, it needs some extra little help. The nutrients haven't been added yet. And usually it's a simple fix. It needs a little bit more oxygen. Sure, sometimes you might get freaked out if it's the fermenter's almost done and something crazy is going on. Those are not good moments, but that rarely happens, knock on wood. Those general kind of odes of fermentation, it's normal. I mean, sometimes you get those excitable interns that have just come out of Davis and they're just like, oh, you got to come smell this tank. It's freaking out. And you're like,
It's fine.
It'll be fine. Just wait till the next pump over.
Well, yeah. That's your experience right there, yeah. Talking, right? Just like anybody, really. Yeah. So let's talk about Vintage in Napa Valley, the TV show.
Well, Marisa and myself and Elizabeth from Chimney Rock were followed around during the 2012 vintage, and people have an opportunity to see us all on the PBS show Vintage Napa Valley, and it will give everyone who enjoys wine a really interesting view of what happens during harvest, you know, from the sampling, from talking with our growers, you know, the pump overs. I think it's things, even people who go to any wine area and they taste one and they love wine, they don't see necessarily what happens during the vintage. And so it's going to be, I mean, people love reality TV. There's just, you know, I mean, well.
Sorry, forget my reaction there. I didn't mean that. Go on.
No. But I mean, I think, but this in this case, it's going to be very educational, I think, at the same time. And, you know, I can't speak to Marisa. I was leery about being followed around. And I haven't even seen the first episode, which airs on Friday. And so I'm anxious to see it. But, I mean, the clips and the promotions that I have seen, it's just beautifully filmed. And the producers, Peter and Antoine, I think have really captured something very beautiful. And with the exception of anything on me, I'm very excited to see it.
Take that back.
Well, and I should note, too, this being January, gosh, today's the 9th, I believe, so it'll be this week.
Yeah, it'll be
and,
tomorrow.
So
yeah.
By the time this airs, it'll be already one up and going. But what was your involvement, Marisa?
Just, I was one of the three winemakers that they followed around, mic'd up. And we were all a little bit leery and nervous and kind of like, you want to do what? When? Come on. I mean, we were not exactly cheering like, woo, let's go for it. But as it... I think it shows to Peter and Antoine, you know, and their staff that you forgot that they were there, and they were very respectful of when I could and could not film. But I'm really excited. Now looking back, you know, I don't really remember everything. You know, you get in your trance and you're working. So I think that is a true testament to them, because if it was somebody that you noticed that they were there all the time, it would have been very awkward and probably not filmed as well. And like Kim said, the trailer and the little snippets we've seen have been really great. So I'm excited to see how it all comes together. And I think it's excited, too, to showcase to our staff. I mean, she talks to that, you know, she's had a family work at Markham. We've had cellar hands in the cellar since, you know, it started as well. And I think it's a great tribute to them as well for, you know, for them to get some of the spotlight too, because they're in there too.
Yeah. I mean, Marisa and I get kudos because of our positions. And I try to do everything that I can to take it back to the guys and say, hey, you know, everyone loved the wines that you guys make. Mm-hmm. But, you know, being able to have them, you know, see themselves and the winery get that also will be great. And they're everyone's very proud. Everyone's very proud, and as they should be.
As they should be, absolutely. I mean, what they do, what you do is very, very cool. But it's also a bit of a mystery for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Again, going back to the idea of pulling the curtain aside.
Can I just add one little thing
sure.
to that? I'm actually really excited to see it because I like to see them what goes on in Kim's world, in Elizabeth's world, you know? Because,
yeah.
you know, you're so engrossed in your own winery. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So for me, when I'm watching the trailer, I'm always like, oh, look at what she's doing. Oh, yeah, you know.
That's
so
true.
I think it will be really fun from our perspective just also to see kind of things that we do similarly and mm-hmm. not so similarly.
Well, funny enough, we get, for Life Between the Vines, we get comments from winemakers often because it's the same reason. Mm-hmm. It's a friend of theirs, you know, maybe they know you and they get to kind of hear your point of
yeah.
view, which is very different. Is there a link that our listeners can go to see this show online if they do that?
I know that there's a website. It's vintagetvseries.com. And that they can go there now, even there's going to be little snippets, there's little even side videos as well you can see, and also the schedule of in different markets. But yeah, vintagetvseries.com is Peter's website, and you can see the trailer there as well.
And maybe some great outtakes if we're lucky.
Yes. I think they're going to be kind of filtering them down. There's info on all three of us.
There's something always weird going on in a cellar, isn't there?
I had a stunt double. It wasn't me in any of that.
She just signed a piece of paper. It has nothing to do with this. I want to say thank you to both of you for making the trip here in this absolutely frigid part of the country right now. And it's been really great to meet you. But specifically, before I go any further, for our listeners to find out more, Marisa, how would our listeners find out about Rutherford Hill?
They can go to rutherfordhill.com.
And Kim
and
for Markham.
Same. You know, they can go to markhamvineyards.com or they can like us on Facebook and they can see anything that we post on there.
Yeah, we're on Facebook as well.
A lot of wineries are on Facebook, which is like one of the best ways to sort of a backdoor access to see what's going on, which mm-hmm. is pretty cool. Thank you very much for coming to Life Between the Vines and to Milwaukee. Really pleasure meeting you both.
Thank you for having us.
Cheers, Ray.
Cheers. No glasses were harmed in the process of that. Learn more about Marisa and Kim at rutherfordhill.com and markhamvineyards.com. And check out the PBS show Vintage at vintagetvseries.com. Thanks for listening to this program. And watch for our next podcast, where we'll be celebrating Premier Napa Valley 2014 by doing a rebroadcast of Premier Napa Valley 2013. Cheers! Life Between the Vines was produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Original music by Tim Turton. Our intern is Ben Geishan. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our web geek is Tim Panicucci. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2013.